Welcome to those that are joining us. We're continuing in the middle of the story of the Chacham and the Tam, the sophisticate and the simpleton. In the last session, we got up to the part where both the Chacham and Tam had been invited by the king to come to him. The Tam jumped at the opportunity right away, didn't ask questions, and ended up being welcomed by the king. And not only that, but on the way, traveling to the king, because of different circumstances, he was actually designated to be governor of the entire district, and then he was elevated still further until he became chief minister of the king. Then we went on to show how the Chacham, the sophisticate, when he received his invitation to the king, right away he started thinking and making chakirois, which means philosophically thinking. And this led him so far off the path that he started questioning whether there is a king, whether there could possibly be a king, and twisted himself to the point where he came to the conclusion that there is no king, there's no such thing as a king, and he actually went ahead and convinced the messenger who had been sent to him by the king that there is no king, because the messenger was also a chacham, a thinker. And these people, by misusing their thinking processes, misled themselves, you know, way, way down, until the sophisticate said to his buddy now, the one who came originally to invite him to the king, "Let's travel the world and I'll show you how mistaken the entire world is." And he would use as his favorite joke and as his point of reference, he would say, like the king. Just like people think there's a king, so too they're wrong regarding whatever else they think. And sure enough, Rabbi Nachman continues that they traveled until they used up all their finances, and then eventually they had to sell one horse of the wagon that they were using, and then the second horse, until they ended up being forced to travel by foot, to walk. And they were still big philosophers, always thinking, analyzing things, and always coming to the conclusion that nobody knows what they're talking about. And eventually, they became very poor, and their self-respect, their respect in the eyes of people, disappeared. People looked down upon them because they appeared like a team of beggars. And this is where we pick up on the final section of the story. Rabbi Nachman tells us that things continued and they walked from place to place until eventually they came to the city where this minister, this chief of all ministers, who was originally the simpleton, lived. In that city, there was what Rabbi Nachman calls a true Baal Shem. This is a term that Rabbi Nachman uses to refer to a tzaddik, a master of the name, one who was a great master in Torah, and one who was looked up to by people as being a tzaddik, one who people would turn to help them in spiritual matters. And this Baal Shem was very respected because he had succeeded in actually bringing about miraculous salvations for people. And even among the ministers of the king, this Baal Shem was respected and renowned. Now, these two sophisticates came to the city, and they're walking around until eventually they got to the house of this Baal Shem. They saw that there are maybe 40, 50 wagons parked near the house of this Baal Shem with people that were ill. So the sophisticate immediately assumed, must be that some doctor lives here. And that's why all of these patients, all of these sick people have come here, have gathered here. So he wanted to enter into the house, because he was also a great doctor. So he thought he'd try to get into the house to be able to meet this doctor that lives in the city. So he asked some of the people there, who lives in this house? They told him, a Baal Shem. A Baal Shem is one, is another title for a tzaddik. As soon as he heard this, he started laughing, and he said to his friend, this is some lie. This is a real mistake. And this is a greater foolishness than the foolishness about the king. Those people who are silly enough to believe that there's a king, imagine there are people even more foolish than them who believe in a Baal Shem, who believe in a tzaddik. My friend, let me tell you how silly this is, how ridiculous this is, and how people are so mistaken. Now, these two sophisticates who were traveling together were hungry. And they still had 3-4 coins with them. So they decided to go to a kitchen in that city where they could buy food inexpensively. So sure enough, they showed up there and they requested food and they were given food. While they were eating, they were talking among themselves, these two chachamim, and they were laughing and mocking this foolishness, this ridiculous mistake that people believe in a Baal Shem. The owner of the kitchen heard their words and got very angry, because in that city the Baal Shem was very respected. So the owner of the kitchen said to them, eat what's in front of you and then leave. As they're continuing to eat, the son of the Baal Shem came into the same kitchen where food is being served, and they were still mocking and making sarcastic comments and jokes about the Baal Shem in front of his son. At this point, the owner of the kitchen got so upset about the fact that they were making fun of the Baal Shem in front of his son, to the point where he actually struck them. He beat them, he beat these two chachamim, and he pushed them out of his home. This was like a small restaurant that he ran in his house. So he threw them out of the house. Now they got very angry at this, and they decided to seek justice over the fact that they were thrown out and hit like this. So they decided to go to the place where they had put their bags, the inn, where they had placed their things, and to speak to the innkeeper about where they can seek justice for what was done to them. So they came and they told the innkeeper about the fact that this person who ran this restaurant in his house had hit them. So he asked them, why? Why did he hit you? So they told him, because they were saying, they were making jokes and a mockery of the Baal Shem. So the innkeeper said, certainly, it's not the right thing for anyone to hit someone. However, you also did something wrong in speaking about this Baal Shem, and speaking insultingly about this Baal Shem, especially since this Baal Shem is very respected here in this city. They looked at him and they saw another one who thinks that there's something to this. He's also mistaken. So they left him and they went to a pocket, Rabbi Nezal says. A pocket is some type of an officer who was a non-Jew. And they told him this whole story, what happened to them, that they came to this restaurant and they were talking against the Baal Shem and they got hit for it. And when they told him why they got beaten, this pocket hit them even harder, and he threw them out of his house. Now they left him, and they went from one leader to the next, until they eventually got to the minister, to this chief of ministers that the king had appointed, who was actually the childhood friend of this sophisticate. Now we know that around the home of a minister, there's soldiers protecting it, and these soldiers gave over the message to the minister that there's someone who needs to see him. So he said, have him come in. This sophisticate came before the minister, and as soon as he entered, the minister recognized him, his childhood friend, the simpleton who had now become at first a governor and then a minister and then chief of ministers. He recognized this sophisticate. The sophisticate, however, couldn't recognize him because obviously he had changed so much. He had undergone such a change from being a poor shoemaker to the level of minister of government. And now the minister spoke up and said to him, look at my tmimus. Look at my simplicity. Look what it brought me to. Look at the greatness that I achieved as a result of my simplicity, my sincerity. And look where your chachmas, look where your sophistication has gotten you. Now the sophisticate spoke up and said, since you are my friend, my childhood friend, the simpleton, regarding that issue, we'll talk later. We'll discuss that later. Right now, I want you to serve justice over the fact that I got beaten. So the minister said, why? Why did this person beat you? He said, because I spoke up. I said my piece about the Baal Shem, that it's a lie and it's trickery. It's fooling the people. So the minister, who was once a simple shoemaker, spoke up and said, you're still following your sophistication? You're still following your mind? Look, you said that you could easily get to my level. All you'd have to do, as you said at the time, was to lose your mind. And that I could never get to your level of respectability and wealth. Look, you see that I've already gotten to your level. I'm at least as wealthy as you were. I'm at least as respected as you are at your peak. And you have not gotten to my level at all. You haven't achieved any simplicity, any humbleness, any sincerity. And I see that it's much more difficult for you to get to my level, the minister said, for you to achieve tmimus than it is for me to attain what you had. However, despite that, because of the fact that this minister knew him from years before he had become a minister, he still decided to be nice to him, and he gave the command to bring clothing to dress this sophisticate, because obviously the clothing that he was wearing at this point was tattered and everything, and he also invited the sophisticate to come and eat with him. While they were eating, they began to talk, and the sophisticate started speaking his ideology and telling the minister how there's no such thing as a king. There's no king. Now, the minister got real angry, and he said, what are you talking about? I myself have seen the king. Now, if you recall early in the story, when the sophisticate started on this whole thing, each person he would challenge, he would always say, You believe there's a king? Yes. Have you seen the king? No. Ah, you see? You see? Implying that he would only go by what he sees. But once he sees something, or once somebody could substantiate that they saw the king, that would be it. You would think that's the end of the argument. At this point, the sophisticate hears from the minister that I've seen the king with my own eyes. At this point, he laughs. The sophisticate laughs and says, you know for sure that this is the king? You're positive? You can be 100% positive that this is the king? You know him and you know his father and grandfather. You know for sure that this is the one who... And you know that his father was the king before, and his grandfather, you weren't even around. You never saw his father or his grandfather. How do you know that this is the king? Because people have told you, people said that this is the king. They fooled you, they lied to you. At this point, the minister, who was the previous Tam, got very angry about this, at seeing that this sophisticate completely denies that there is a king. At this point, somebody appeared and said that the devil has sent for them. When the minister heard this, the minister who was once a Thomas, the simpleton, when he heard this, he started trembling. And he ran and told his wife about this with tremendous fear. He told her that the devil has sent for him. His wife told him, go send for the Baal Shem. So sure enough, the minister immediately summoned the Baal Shem. The Baal Shem appeared, and he gave this minister kameyas and shmirois. A kameyas, an amulet. It's a piece of parchment or paper on which a tzaddik inscribes different names of Hashem or special psukim which serve as a protection for a person based on different on what circumstance, what kind of problem the person has at the time. And the Baal Shem said to him, now you have nothing to be afraid of whatsoever. As soon as the minister heard this, he believed him completely. And now the sophisticate and the minister, the former simpleton, were sitting together, and the sophisticate said to him, what do you get so scared about? So he said to him, I got scared because the devil sent for us. So the sophisticate started laughing. You believe that there's such a thing as a devil? So he said to him, if not, who's the one who sent for us? So the sophisticate said, probably it's my brother who wants to meet me, he wants to see me, and he probably pulled this prank, this joke, saying that it's the devil that's sending for me. So the minister said to him, if that's the case, if this is your brother, how did he get past all the guards? There are guards here. Nobody comes in here just, you know, when they want. So the sophisticate said, well, sure, he must have bribed them. And they're all playing up to his lie. They'll all say that they didn't see. Nobody saw him. At this point, another person appeared and said that the devil sent for them. Now the minister, who was the original Tam, at this point, he wasn't frightened at all because of the fact that he had this shmirah, he had this protection that he had gotten from the Baal Shem, and he believed in it completely. So he spoke up and said to the sophisticate, now what do you say? So he said, I'll tell you. I'm telling you that I have a brother who's very angry at me, and he's the one who's playing this trick to try to frighten me. And at this point, the sophisticate stood up and he asked the person who came in to tell them this message, what does he look like, this one who sent for us? What does his face look like? What color is his hair? So the messenger said, he looks like, you know, he described exactly what he looked like. So the sophisticate spoke up and said, you see, that's exactly what my brother looks like. So the minister said, okay, are you willing to go with him? The sophisticate said, sure, just give me a soldier to accompany me so that in case he tries to hurt me or punish me in any way, he shouldn't be able to. So sure enough, the minister provided a soldier, a guard, to accompany him. At this point, the sophisticate and his buddy, the one who was traveling with him, the one who was originally the messenger from the king who had been sent to summon him, they both followed this messenger now. And a short while later, the guard returned. So the minister asked, where are they? Where are the two sophisticates? So the guards said, we have no idea. They disappeared. What actually happened was that the devil had grabbed them, these two sophisticates, and threw them into mud. And in this place where there was this tremendous amount of mud and filth, this is where the devil sits on his throne amidst all of this filth, and these two sophisticates were dumped into the filth. And this filth was very thick and sticky. It would stick to a person like clay, so that they were caught in it and they couldn't move at all. So they started screaming. These two sophisticates started screaming at the ones who were punishing them, the devil and his people. Rishoim, you evil people, you evil ones, why are you punishing us? Why are you making us suffer like this? Is there any such thing in the world as a devil? You're evil, and you're punishing us for no reason. Because again, they still refuse to believe that there is such a thing as a devil. They just were saying that this must be evil people. They assumed it was evil people that had trapped them like this and that were causing them this pain and suffering without any justification. Now, both of them are in this slop. They're in this thick mud and they're thinking what to do. And they're saying to themselves, this must be just a bunch of ruffians who somehow we've slighted them, we've angered them at some point in time, and they're looking to get back at us. And that's why they're punishing us in this way. And they suffered there tremendously, all kinds of suffering for many years, for several years. One time, the minister who was originally the shoemaker, we had said, we called him the Tam, the simpleton, passed by the house of the Baal Shem, and he remembered his old buddy, the sophisticate. So he went into the house of the Baal Shem, and he approached him the way ministers would usually approach the Baal Shem, and he asked him if it's possible to see him. He asked if it's possible for the Baal Shem to be able to show him where his sophisticate friend is. And also, is it possible for the Baal Shem to take the sophisticate out of the predicament that he's in? And at this point, he said to the Baal Shem, do you remember this sophisticate for whom the devil sent for him and carried him away? And from that day, I've never seen him. So the Baal Shem responded, sure, I remember him. So the minister asked him, can you show me his place, where he is? And can you take him out of there? The Baal Shem said, definitely. I have the ability to show you exactly where he is and to take him out. However, on one condition, that only the two of us, you and I, go there alone without any accompaniment. So sure enough, they went together. The Baal Shem did some type of mystical thing, and they found themselves in the place of the devil. And they saw that these two chachomim, these two sophisticates, are lying in thick mud. And as soon as the sophisticate saw the minister, he started screaming to him, "My brother, look! They're beating us! They're making us suffer here, these evil people, for no reason!" So the minister got angry at him again, and he said, "You're still playing sophisticate? You still don't believe in anything? According to you, these are human beings that are imposing this suffering upon you? Look! Look carefully now. You see the Baal Shem that's with me? This Baal Shem whom you refuse to believe in completely? He's the one who has the ability to extricate you, to get you out of this. And he will show you the truth. He's going to reveal the truth to you." At this point, the minister, who used to be the simpleton, requested from the Baal Shem that he take them out. He released them. And he showed them that this is really a devil, that it's not human beings at all. The Baal Shem did what he did, and suddenly these two sophisticates found themselves on dry land. There was no mud, no filth, and the Mazikim, the devil and all of his cohorts, disappeared. They became like dust. At this point, the Chacham saw clearly, the sophisticate couldn't deny whatsoever the truth, and he was forced to admit to everything. He was forced to admit that there is a king, and there is a Baal Shem, and there is a devil, etc., etc. This is the end of the story as Rabbi Nachman presents it. And there's a short commentary now that's found at the end of the story where it tells us that it's regarding this story in Sipurei Maaseiot that the chapter in Likutei Moran, chapter 19, in the second half of Likutei Moran speaks about when it discusses the difference between sophistication, the wrong type of sophistication, versus simplicity and sincerity. And Rabbi Nachman tells us there that the Iker Shlemus, the true success, is only when a person achieves, when a person is simple and sincere. And Rabbi Nachman there discusses the topic of Amalek, and Rabbi Nachman tells us that Amalek was a sophisticate, and he denied everything. Rabbi Nachman there quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, Sheva Yipoil Tzadik V'Kom, that the Tzadik is the one who has the ability to enter into any one of these seven wisdoms and to be able to study it, to delve into it, and to succeed in studying the wisdom in a way that it doesn't harm him in any way. It only helps him and improves him. And it's in that chapter in Likutei Moran that Rabbi Nachman says that usually when it comes to important people, great people, usually their downfall is their sophistication. They try to be too smart for themselves in terms of rejecting faith and rejecting certain basic principles that are respected by the world. Rabbi Nachman added at this point that we find one of the descendants of Amalek, the Torah tells us, his name was Agag. He lived during the time of King Saul, Shaul HaMelech, and he was actually the king of the Philistines at the time, the king of the nation of Amalek. And Hashem had commanded Shaul HaMelech to destroy the nation of Amalek completely at that time. men, women, children, animals, possessions, wipe them out completely. Shaul HaMelech, unfortunately, submitted to the will of the people, who decided to leave some of the animals, the cattle, alive. And in addition, he did not kill the king, this Agag. And the Navi tells us in Shmuel HaNavi, Vayelech Agag Ma'adonois, that at this point, even though Agag was in captivity, he walked as if he was still a mefunak. He was still a king, acting as if he's still king, as if he still expects to be treated royally. Because he refused to believe that his end was near, that it was all over for him, until he saw Shmuel HaNavi, and that was when he said, Ochein sor mar hamovis. Now I see that my final destination has arrived. My end has come. There's one other note where Rabbi Nachman made a comment that if a person's prayer is not perfect, then it's like a three-cornered shoe. This is something that we had earlier in the story when we spoke about the Tam and how at one point when he was making shoes, because of the fact that he wasn't the best craftsman, very often the shoes, instead of coming out like a normal standard shoe, his shoes would come out three-cornered. And despite that, he didn't get down. He took pride in his work. He was happy with life and happy with what he did. And we see that eventually he got to tremendous success. There is quite a bit of commentary at the end of the story. And one of the points that's discussed happens to correspond to this week's parsha. This week, we're going to be reading Parshas Toldos, which speaks about the birth of twins, how Yitzchak and Rivka gave birth to Yaakov and Esav. And these two children were twins. They were actually in their mother's womb together. And there was a battle taking place even at that point in time. And the Torah tells us eventually when they were born, in describing them, Yaakov Avinu is described as Ish Tam. Yaakov Avinu was the one who was wholesome, who had this simplicity, a pure type of simplicity. Whereas Esav is called Ish Tzai, the hunter, the murderer. And we see that Yaakov Avinu ends up living a life of Torah, a life of religion, piety. Esav, we're told about all of his misdeeds. Kill this one, kill that one. And eventually these two evolve in two different nations. From Yaakov Avinu comes forth the Jewish people. From Esav comes forth the non-Jews. And we know the Torah tells us that at one point, Hashem, the king, decided to extend an invitation to both of these. The invitation is the Torah. An invitation to come to appear before the king, to come close to the king. The Gemara tells us that when the Torah was offered to Esav and his comrades, his fellow brethren, each one of them asked, tell me what it's about. I can't just accept an invitation from the king at face value. I need to know what this is all about. And each time they were told a particular commandment from the Torah, which they took issue with, which they couldn't accept, and as a result they ended up refusing the Torah, refusing to accept the Torah. Whereas, when the Torah was offered to the Jewish people, we're told that their response was, Naseh v'nishma. Where do we sign? If the king himself is inviting us, then I'm prepared to accept his invitation before I understand anything. Without understanding fully what it's all about, what all the details are, I'm in. I'm prepared to sign on the dotted line. And this is one of the examples where we're shown the difference between the tmimus and pshitus of the Jewish people, who are referred to in the book of Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, as Yoinosi Samosi, my pure white dove. Tamosi is Miloshin Tam, pure, wholesome, lily white, versus the other nations who have this harmful, this negative type of sophistication, a misplaced sophistication. The Torah praises wisdom, knowledge, chachma. The world was created with chachma, and chachma is very helpful when it's combined with emunah, when it's combined with faith. If a person has the proper foundation of faith, faith in Hashem, faith in the Torah, faith in tzaddikim, they can build on that. They can build, they can add layers and layers of knowledge and wisdom, always, always included, always attached to faith, and then the knowledge and wisdom is constructive. It's helpful. It's beneficial to the person. Whereas a person who pursues knowledge simply for the sake of knowledge, where the knowledge is not attached to faith in any way, the knowledge is not attached to anything spiritual. It's something the person is pursuing either for the sake of money or personal pride, personal glory. A type of knowledge that's being pursued in that manner doesn't lead to any good. That type of knowledge doesn't improve a person's life, but rather we find that even when such a person amasses a wealth of knowledge and tremendous financial wealth, the person is never happy, always unhappy, always angry, always dissatisfied, always seeing bad, seeing the negative side in people, seeing the negative side in what's going on in general. This is the conclusion of the story. If there are any questions or comments, once again, one of the lessons that we touched upon in the story was where the Tam, the simpleton, who was a shoemaker at that time, he made his shoes and he was actually making very little profit on each pair of shoes. And at one point his wife said to him, if your shoes are so sweet and so wonderful and so excellent as you make them out to be, how come other people are selling shoes and making much, much more profit, and you're making so little? And when he heard this, his response to her was, other people? What's it my affair what other people are doing? Why should it concern me in any way whatsoever what other people are doing? And anyway, let me explain to you. And he began to give her a breakdown of his expenses involved in making a shoe, how much this cost and that cost, and he was able to prove to her that at the end of making a pair of shoes, he's actually earning 3.5 cents. So he's okay. Rabbi Nosson Zal, Rabbi Nachman's main student in Likutei Halachos, comments that this is also a very important piece of advice to all of us, that many times one of the things that causes suffering and defeat and giving up hope to a person is when a person looks at someone else and sees or perceives that that person is doing much better than them, and they get angry at that, and they get upset, and they get jealous, and all kinds of negative feelings. In many cases, this could bring about a tremendous undoing of a person, both on a physical level and also spiritually. And Rabbi Nosson Zal says this is the point when the Torah speaks about the mitzvah of counting the Omer, right after the holiday of Pesach begins, and it says, "Usifatem lochem mimocharas haShabbos." You will count for yourself these 7 weeks. Rabbi Nosson Zal emphasizes that word lochem there, that when a person is counting, when a person is trying to climb a ladder, a spiritual ladder, they're trying to advance in life, spiritually or in any other way, it's very important at times that the person count for themselves. not to look at somebody else's count, not to look at where somebody else is, how many levels above me they are, how far ahead of me they are, because very often that could be discouraging, that could be harmful. A person has to have the ability to concentrate, to focus on themselves. And as long as the person knows with full sincerity that they're trying their best, that they're really doing everything they can to do things right and to advance, that person will definitely eventually get to their success, to their true success. We'll hold it here at this point. The next story, which is actually the 10th story of Rabbi Nachman's stories, is entitled Maise Miberger Va'oni, which tells a story about a berger, is a businessman, and a pauper. And the story is one of the longer stories, and once again it has a tremendous amount of advice and spiritual insights that all of us can benefit from in a big way.